The Tom Woods Show, episode 2025.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and fail to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hi folks, Tom Woods here. I'm sharing something with you today that I'm rather pleased with. These are the remarks I delivered at the Mises Institute's event in Angleton, Texas, in the Lake Jackson area where Ron Paul lives. And this was held December 4th, 2021. And it's a retrospective on the Ron Paul Revolution. So what follows are my brief remarks on that occasion. But you'll notice in a couple of brief moments, I refer to having mentioned such and such earlier in the day. And what I'm talking about there is I did actually address the group very, very briefly earlier in the day when I introduced Glenn Greenwald, who joined us via a video hookup from Brazil. What wound up happening was Daniel McAdams, whom I love dearly, executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, his remarks finished unexpectedly early, and Greenwald's hookup was not ready yet. But nevertheless, I was sent up there to introduce him, and then I'm being signaled to from offstage, you know, he's not ready, just keep going, just keep talking. And I'll tell you something, if I didn't have over 25 years of public speaking experience, that would have been terrifying. A room, absolutely packed room, and I've just got to somehow keep on going and just talk. And I only know so much about Glenn Greenwald. I'm sure most of you know who he is. He's just an outstanding independent journalist. But that's okay. I made it work. I came up with things to say. I think it was handled reasonably well. And then once the hookup was complete, I turned it over to Glenn. So that was kind of fun. I don't know that the video of that still exists or has been made public. I think probably Glenn's own remarks have been made public. But me desperately trying to hold things together with somebody just giving me the gesture to keep on going, just keep talking. Well, that was an interesting adventure in public speaking. But that's now behind me as I enter into the remarks you're about to hear. So here we go. This talk was called Lessons from the Ron Paul Revolution. Hope you enjoy it. All right. Well, I have a bunch of fun stories to tell and then some lessons to draw from them. I better keep an eye after I promised that I was going to keep us more or less on time. There's the clock. Okay. I'd like to begin by saying this. Other than my children, and as you know, one of them is here with me in the audience today, I have never been prouder of anything in my life than to have worked with and been associated with Ron Paul. The cynic will scoff, but I mean it when I say that the man is genuinely a hero to me. Now, the biggest project I've worked on with him occurred after he left Congress, and that is the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum. It's a K-12 curriculum. It's video-based and self-taught, which means that parents don't have to run themselves ragged. It gives students, wait for it, both sides of the story. How about that? Revolutionary. And it equips them to do things that no government school does, how to communicate effectively, how to manage their finances, how to run a home business, the sorts of things you would think they would learn in a school, but oddly enough, they don't. The website that I use for it, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Now, as I say, this talk is called Lessons of the Revolution. So here's the first lesson drawn from that homeschool curriculum. Politics isn't everything. Think about the enormous sums that have been blown by political action committees on hopelessly badly run campaigns. If even a tiny sliver of that had been spent to develop a homeschool curriculum that would educate thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of people, think about where we'd be then. But it never occurred to anybody with all these billions of donor dollars floating around DC think tanks and political action committees, never occurred to anybody, maybe this isn't the best use of that money. How about a K through 12 homeschool curriculum? That was Ron Paul's idea. Now, as I look back in anticipation of this talk on the years 2008 and 2012, the years of the presidential campaigns we recall so fondly, so many fond memories came rushing back. Of course, we all remember the Giuliani moment, Rudy Giuliani criticizing Dr. Paul in one of the Republican debates for having suggested that the United States might have been attacked on 9/11 for some reason other than we're so awesome and they're just envious of our awesomeness. He just refuses to talk to people that way. He's not going to do it. And Rudy Giuliani piped up, brother, the congressman didn't mean that. Blah, 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 blah. And you know how American society works. Somebody utters the truth by accident, usually. Somebody else demands that that truth be retracted, and the person sheepishly says, oh, I'm so sorry, what I meant to say was... Dr. Paul revolutionized the way American society works because he said, not only am I not taking it back, I'm going to double down on it. And the next day, he brought the guy who was the head of, had been the head of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, had a press conference with him and said, here's a bunch of books on what led to 9/11 that I think Rudy Giuliani needs to read because he seems so ignorant and uninformed. Like, whoa, you were supposed to say, I'm sorry I said this. I was so wrong. We were attacked because we're awesome. And no, he went on the offensive. I thought, yeah, that's my man. Yeah, go after Rudy Giuliani. That never happens, but it happened that day. I remember the massive turnouts at these state Republican straw polls. I went to one of these in 2008 when I was living in Alabama. Dr. Paul beat all the other candidates put together in this straw poll because who was going to give up his Saturday afternoon for Fred Thompson after all, right? But we all did it. We all did it for Dr. Paul. I recall the thousands and thousands of cheering kids who flocked to him wherever he went. I remember there was one university event, and it was either Michigan or Minnesota. It was one of those M universities, and I just can't remember which one. But I remember seeing him come out to this packed audience, and he did this. Like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. I can't believe this is happening. I remember the grassroots put together in 2008. I guess it was 2007, an event called Paint the Town Ron. And at night, we went around our towns and we hung up signs saying Ron Paul for president, Google Ron Paul, who is Ron Paul? So the next day, everybody wakes up and it's all over town. Now, I would like to tell you that as good libertarians, we very, very carefully distinguish between public and private property when we put these signs up. I would like to tell you that. I remember the Ron Paul blimp that flew over the United States, spreading the newspapers are going to tell you about Ron Paul. They're going to put a blimp in the sky and tell you about him. No one else is doing that for anybody else. Or my friend Michael Maresco, who got on his bike and rode the entire length of the United States to spread the message of Ron Paul. And you think, wow, it's amazing that a cyclist would do that. He wasn't even a cyclist. He was just a guy who, you know, he knew how to ride a bike like most of us. He was not a cyclist. He did this because he loved the man and he loved the message. Who was going to do that for Tim Pawlenty? You ever even remember who Tim Pawlenty is? Whoever said, my life was changed forever when I encountered the philosophy of Mitt Romney. So I recall the joys, the friendships, these fun projects, the laughter, and yes, indeed, of course, also the heartache. But I also recall the blackout. So here's another lesson. The media is not just biased. The media has an agenda. Now, today, that seems like, well, old hat. Yeah, I know I'm shaming you for clapping because it's such an obvious thing to say. I'm sorry. I hate to say things that are obvious, but it wasn't that obvious to everybody in 2007 as it is today. I think a lot of us were actually, as cynical as we may have been, we were actually surprised, weren't we, at just how far they would go to suppress the message of Dr. Paul. Today, we're not surprised. Today, you're skeptical of, seven masks and a whatever, and they think you're some crazy extremist and they won't let you speak your mind. But this was a guy who was shooting laser beams right between the eyes of the American establishment. He wasn't saying the top income tax rate should be lowered by 3 percentage points. He was saying there should be no income tax. He wasn't saying we should invade country B instead of country A. He was saying, how about we not invade these countries and get our troops out of there? He wanted to abolish every evil, every force for evil in American life without compromise, even when many Americans confused those evils as forces for good. And so the media hid him. It got to the point where Jon Stewart, remember him from the old Daily Show? Jon Stewart is not on our side. But he was aghast. He said, when did Ron Paul become the 13th floor in a hotel? I remember there was a headline from Reuters in the 2008 campaign following one of the Republican debates. The headline was, 2008 Republicans back war. No mention of Ron Paul being very ostentatiously anti-war. No mention. Then later that night, CNN had their post-debate spin, and they had Arianna Huffington, and she said everybody on that stage supported the war, and no one questioned her. And that's Orwellian. That's bizarre. And I already told you in the interlude about MSNBC putting a screen up about fundraising and the political war chests of the various candidates, and they skipped over Ron Paul, who was in second. So they skipped right from first to third. I mean, I don't think that was an accident. They had an intern. I mean, Dr. Paul is a very easy last name to spell. It wasn't that. There's a pattern developing here. All of us recall similar examples of this. So there's a lesson. And we're going to have to build our own things and fight this fight ourselves. How about the way the official conservative movement greeted Ron Paul? Oh, the conservative, oh, they're all for lower spending. And oh, they just love the Constitution. It's their favorite thing in the world. And then somebody comes along actually intending to implement these things, and they treat him like the return of Godzilla. That's the conservative movement for you. He's a kook, they said. And a lot of folks who should have seen through that, a lot of folks who thought they were cheeky because they voted for Mitt Romney, allowed themselves to be snookered. And now I'm not saying that they have to hold their heads in shame for the rest of their lives. We've all made mistakes in our lives. But that was a big one. That was a big one. You had the opportunity to support the Thomas Jefferson of the 21st century. And you said, you know what? I think I'd rather have Romney. That guy seems like he's got a lot of really good ideas and he'll stand up for me. Okay, imagine Mitt Romney being in charge of COVID. Let's just put it that way, okay? We all know how that would have turned out. And so those people, many of whom today now see the light, many of these people are fighting against the insanity and the lies surrounding COVID. And these people supported anybody but Ron Paul in those days. Well, they helped to give rise to that kind of Republican Party. And now they're getting it good and hard. The one guy who would have had the guts to stand up to a Fauci and all the rest of them is the one you said, oh, he's not respectable enough for me. Respectability is what I value above all things. What made him non-respectable? What made him a kook? What? Because he said our foreign policy is expensive, counterproductive, makes us hated all over the world, and is based on stupid propaganda that would insult a second grader. All of that's correct. Monetary policy. He said, if you favor the free market, but you also favor the Federal Reserve, there's some kind of disconnect going on here. Because the Federal Reserve, especially in its modern version, is like a central planning agency. And it's going to plan out and balance employment and inflation because it thinks it can do that with its various tools. Not to mention it pushes interest rates artificially low. And if you believe in the free market, wouldn't you think there would be negative consequences of a government-established monopoly artificially pushing interest rates to a level where they don't want to be? You don't think that's going to lead to any bad consequences? F.A. Hayek won the Nobel Prize for telling you that's going to set the business cycle into effect. You're going to have an artificial boom, and then you're going to have a bust that's going to devastate a lot of people. We got to talk about this. That's what Dr. Paul was talking about. Because of his knowledge, he was able in 2001 to go on the House floor and say, this tech bubble that just burst, they're trying to replace it now with a real estate bubble, and that's going to fare no better. How about that? Meanwhile, one of his opponents, just weeks before Fannie and Freddie went belly up, said that the idea that there was anything wrong with the economy is just carping criticism from left liberals. That was the intellectual level Dr. Paul was up against. And also, he shocked people. You're not supposed to go to Florida and call for free trade with Cuba. No focus group tells you to do that. You're not supposed to go to the reddest of red states, South Carolina, and say we should legalize drugs. So he's a kook. No, he's an honest truth teller who doesn't measure every phrase he utters according to focus group results. Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, BitTrust IRA. A lot of people have been putting crypto into their IRAs. And if you're thinking of doing the same thing, adding Bitcoin to your retirement account, the best way is through BitTrust IRA. The crypto world can be confusing. It's hard to know where to get started. These guys will help you. BitTrust IRA stores your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. And by the way, when they say nuclear bunkers, that isn't just hyperbole where they're saying it's really, really secure. We're actually talking about decommissioned nuclear bunkers. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. So how do you get started? Go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners. That's a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods. bittrustira.com/woods. So a lot of people now who are fighting the good fight against all the madness, they learned a lesson from the Ron Paul revolution, good and hard. You should have listened. You shouldn't have fallen for the propaganda. I'll never forget one night it was time for a Republican presidential debate. And Sean Hannity began the coverage by saying, well, tonight all eyes are on Tim Pawlenty. What kind of a lizard person are you? Why would anybody's eyes be on, of all people, an establishment bore like Tim Pawlenty? And then Sean Hannity professes to wonder what could have gone wrong in the country. Oh, okay. Well, look in the freaking mirror. Maybe you'll get an answer. I might add, by the way, who are the two best people in public life right now in terms of elected officials on the COVID matter? Well, they happen to be two people who were created by the Ron Paul revolution, Rand Paul and Thomas Massie. We gave them to the world. So now, why did Dr. Paul do all this? Why did he defy political convention time after time? Well, first and foremost, we know a good chunk of the reason. He's an honest man. He believes passionately in these ideas, wants them to be heard. But another clue, and yet another lesson of the revolution, comes from Dr. Paul's repeated reference to an essay by Albert J. Nock, I think from the 1930s, called Isaiah's Job. Now, I think Nock more wanted to refer to Elijah, but it doesn't really matter. Listen to the way Albert J. Nock adapts the Lord's instructions to Isaiah into a modern vernacular and see if you don't hear something that sounds a little familiar, a little like maybe we know this story. So this is the Lord speaking to Isaiah through Albert J. Nock's interpretation. Tell them what is wrong and why and what is going to happen unless they have a change of heart and straighten up. Don't mince matters. Make it clear that they are positively down to their last chance. Give it to them good and strong and keep on giving it to them. I suppose perhaps I ought to tell you that it won't do any good. The official class and their intelligentsia will turn up their noses at you and the masses will not even listen. They will all keep on in their own ways until they carry everything down to destruction, and you will probably be lucky if you get out with your life. Well, what's the point of embarking on a mission like that that's doomed to failure? Well, here again is Nock speaking as the Lord. Ah, the Lord said, you do not get the point. There is a remnant there. Remember Dr. Paul talking about the remnant. What did he mean by that? There is a remnant there that you know nothing about. They are obscure, unorganized, inarticulate. They need to be encouraged and braced up because when everything has gone completely to the dogs, they are the ones who will come back and build up a new society. And meanwhile, your preaching will reassure them and keep them hanging on. Your job is to take care of the remnant. So be off now and set about it. And that's what Dr. Paul did. He looked for this invisible remnant, gave them comfort, made them aware of themselves, and provided them a rallying point. So if he sold out for mainstream respectability, he would defeat his purpose entirely. Those approaches repel the remnant, said Nock. But on the other hand, the truth teller who appeals to the remnant will find them. Now, it's true, Dr. Paul wants to make his message as appealing to as many audiences as possible. And so he'll emphasize certain things that will resonate most with them as their way of first getting into our message. He never gratuitously drives anyone away. But he accomplished this task not by the usual method, which is to water down the message and obsess over focus group results. He simply explained himself boldly and without retreat. And we've grown so unaccustomed to that. We're so used to automatons and robots talking to us that this immediately grabs the attention of the thinking person. Now, there are a lot of people who do not want their worldviews challenged. They want endless goodies. They want checks with their names on them. They want to be flattered. They want to be told, you're the awesomest of the awesome, and that's why your government is hated around the world, because we're so awesome. Well, somebody who's at that moral and intellectual level is not going to understand Ron Paul, much less support him. So it's frustrating and fruitless to appeal to people like this, said Nock. And here again, Albert J. Nock, Isaiah preached to the masses only in the sense that he preached publicly. Anyone who liked might listen. Anyone who liked might pass by. He knew that the remnant would listen. And knowing also that nothing was to be expected of the masses under any circumstances, he made no specific appeal to them, did not accommodate his message to their measure in any way, and did not care two straws whether they heeded it or not. As a modern publisher might put it, he was not worrying about circulation or about advertising. Hence, with all such obsessions quite out of the way, he was in a position to do his level best. Now, I think he had such fundraising success as he did because the remnant had never been sought out by a presidential candidate before. This was an intelligent man who defied all political convention, taught the public about things they didn't even know they should be interested in the first place, and had a record of consistency that impressed even the most hardened cynic. That got their attention. And now here's yet another lesson of the revolution. Although Nock spoke of the remnant as if it was a fixed number of people that you could seek out but not expand, Dr. Paul has shown that the remnant can be increased, not just found and inspired. And his commitment to the truth, even when it seemed to yield him only grief, seized the attention of a great many apathetic Americans and added them to the ranks of the remnant. Nock further described the task of finding the remnant as largely a thankless job. You're going to look in vain for tangible results. In any given society, the remnant are always so largely an unknown quantity, said Nock. You do not know and will never know who the remnant are, nor what they are doing or will do. Two things you do know and no more. First, that they exist. Second, that they will find you. Except for these two certainties, working for the remnant means working in impenetrable darkness, said Nock. But Nock lived before the internet. Ron Paul now knows who the remnant are, and there are millions of us. He has a sense of their numbers. He knows some of the things they're doing, and we all know some of the things that everybody else is doing. He knows he's had an impact. Nock didn't think this was possible. In his day, it wasn't. But Ron Paul did that job. He did Isaiah's job. He found and built up the remnant. And as it happens, this remnant is now that group of people doing their level best to resist the irrational and unjust commands being issued by their government. Here's a parallel. Pope John Paul II, shortly after becoming pope, said he wanted to travel to Poland and offer public masses there. This was not something the communist regime would have put number one on its list of things that it favored, but there was no way they could stop it. And what mattered even more than what John Paul said, although he did say, he did strongly suggest to them that there was nothing permanent about the Iron Curtain, but what mattered the most was how many people came out to that. Some of the largest crowds ever. And they looked at each other and they realized how many of them they were. And how few the ruling class were. And that sparked just the right kind of thinking. That's what Dr. Paul did for us. We all felt scattered, isolated. And then we all came out, looked around, and realized there are a lot more of us than we thought. And I told you earlier that when YouTube took away the ability to downvote things, that was its attempt to prevent us from realizing what our numbers are. Because every time the regime puts out one of its propaganda videos, it would be overwhelmingly downvoted. So they just took that away. That says something about our hidden strength. And again, we should remember, if RFK Jr. can get a book to number one in terms of sales in the country, in the face of a complete blackout, the remnant is out there. No. We may not be the majority, but there are a lot more of us than we thought. And when it comes to fighting the current insanity, I happen to believe that most of us who are against it are far, far more intensely against it than most of the people who favor it are in favor of it. Some of them are in favor of it because it's what everybody else believes, and so they just want to quietly go along. But I feel like all of us who are against it are against it with every fiber of our beings. And let's remember, too, at a time when we may feel demoralized, that their side has the bootlickers, the yes men, and the automatons, but our side has the rule breakers, the individualists, the creatives. I wouldn't count us out just yet. It's with this strength that we have, this newfound strength, recognizing ourselves as the remnant, this strength that Dr. Paul shared with us, that we will come out on the other side of this victorious. Thank you. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week. I may have a few fewer episodes than usual in December because I generally like to take a little time off around Christmas time. It used to be I would take 2 full weeks off. I think it'll be fewer missed episodes. Not really missed episodes, right? Everybody's entitled to a little time off, especially around Christmas. But I think I'm probably going to put out more episodes than I normally do in December. But there will be a number of days where there won't be a Tom Woods Show episode and you'll be scratching your head and then you'll say, ah, yes, he told me about this. But in the meantime, you have over 2,000 back episodes. You can always go back and listen to so many great gems in that pile of episodes. There's bound to be. With that many of them, there's bound to be some gems in there. So enjoy those, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.